Hello, everybody. Bill Buckmaster with you. We are off and running, Tom Fairbanks, on this midweek edition. They are at the post. It's April 16th, 2025.
It's not even May yet.
It's already. Not even May.
You're
no,
thinking
we got
about
the Kentucky Derby.
Derby.
Yeah. First Saturday in May for the Derby, of course. Boy, if you like wind and dusty days.
And who doesn't?
This week is for you. Oh, my goodness. Look at this forecast. 25 to 35 mile per hour gusts next 3 days. But the good news is by Easter Sunday morning, it should be absolutely perfect. Looking forward to a great Easter with highs around mid-70s maybe. So it should be really good for a late April Easter. Last year, I think it was the earliest it could be. And now it's, I think, the last possible Sunday that it could be. We'll find out about that with Father Robert Hendrickson talking about Easter tomorrow. But right now, it's the Buckmaster Show in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studio. We're at the Bustos Media Center in central Tucson. 5 radio stations under one roof. This one's 1030 KVOI, The Voice. We have doing the radio show now into our 15th year. We have our worldwide live listening. All of our podcasts and the website for the Buckmaster Show is buckmastershow.com. You can live listen to the program. And of course, my wonderful assistant, Rosemary Brandt, has the programs up and posted probably about 5 to 6 o'clock in the evening, same day, and you can hear the whole show at that time. All right, our telephone interviews for our live line is presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Sean and the gang over there do a great job. Once a month, we try to get the Tucson City Councilman Paul Cunningham with us on the show, and he is with me in studio. Councilman, how are you?
I'm doing great, Bill. Thanks for having me.
And I'm very happy that you just had a birthday.
Well, my birthday's always been 3 days before my mom. So when I was a kid, my birthday was a big deal, but now it's my mom. So I want to wish my mom a happy birthday today. She always has her birthday. Our birthday always, I was raised of the Jewish faith on my mom's side, and my father was Irish Catholic, so there was plenty of guilt to go around. And we'd have every year Passover is about 3 or 4 days before Easter.
So yes, yes.
It's that time of the year, and just want to let my mom know I'm thinking about her today.
All right. Yeah, it is Easter week, and of course it is Passover as well, so a lot going on in the religious world. Richard Fimbrace, long-serving Tucson City Councilman, will be stepping aside May 1st. Health issues really have made this a necessity, so his term will really only have 4 or 5 months, correct?
Yeah, so he's up for election this year. Well, he would have been up for election this year. He announced earlier this year he wasn't running. There were discussions in the past and whether or not he should stay in office. And that's a whole shoulda, woulda, coulda discussion we don't need to have now. It's a moot point. And, you know, we have to remember that Richard's put some 50 years of public service together through the Governor's Office of Highway Safety, working for Pima County. He served in the 8th to the 40th alongside my father, as a matter of fact. And the 8th to the 40th was home to almost every single reservist we had in Tucson for, you know, 3 decades mm-hmm. after the war, after World War II.
Mm-hmm.
He is everything about Tucson that's old school. He was part of the 1973 Tucson High State football team, from what I understand, state championship football team. I mean, he did so many amazing things in our city that are special and that are excellent.
Mm-hmm.
He's a Tucson High School Hall of Fame member and a University of Arizona graduate. And on the Tucson Council piece, he also served on the board of Pima Community College. People forget that. But on the Tucson Council piece, You think about the Renaissance of Ward 5, as he liked to call it. You think about the bridges and all the development that went into the Silver Lake area, which is ironically the former training area of the 8th to 40th. That was just a big desert. That's where Silver Lake was many, many years ago when it went dry before 1930. And they do maneuvers on the dry lake bed on the weekend sometimes. And so he helped really usher that process through. He advocated for the old school Silver Lake Armory to become a Tucson asset and be repurposed. He advocated for the P-card, which completely streamlines government and how it's able to spend money on smaller things. He advocated tirelessly for the Cherry Bell post office station, which we were in danger of losing several years in a row. So you've got to believe, you got to respect that he's put that his legacy's intact, that public servant's, there's no reason to have a discussion on whether he left or too late or too early. That's over. Yeah. He's done a great job for Tucson. He deserves the best retirement he can get. And we've just got to focus on, as fast as possible, replacing him.
And how does that process work, basically?
So how do you do that? See us veering off the path of what we've done before. We collect some applications, we screen them, they get a chance to present to council, then we vote. We've done that each time.
And could they be candidates?
Is this a placeholder position? Well, by law, we can't preclude anybody from applying, but we can politically say it's really not a problem. I mean, I'd have a really tough time choosing between the four candidates that we have that are already going through the process and saying, by the way, you three don't matter. We're going to pick this person. I don't know if that's a – I think that's some bad juju if we do something like that. So what I'd say is that we bring in a placeholder. We plan on voting on a placeholder. We see who applies. And we try to get them seen on the 6th. We outline the process on the 22nd, pass the process on the night of the 22nd, have the deadlines for the applications by April 20th, and then April 22nd, and post them all online. Discuss the applications, and the candidates can speak to us during study session the 22nd. Then we seat that council member in the first item that night. So we need seven council members right now. We have so many things that we're talking about, from the bus to water rates to
RTA.
We just police presence, homeless. The budget, homeless. I mean, we have so many we need all seven seats filled. So I think that's super important we do that.
All right. The city council is intending to implement a new rate structure that would raise Tucson water bills for those in the unincorporated Pima County area. There will be a public hearing during the June 17th meeting to approve the new rates. And by the way, the Tucson Water Director, Mr. Kamik, will be our Friday Focus interview this week. Now, this might be a little confusing to the listeners because many living in the foothills thought that a judge had said, gee, you can't charge the people in the foothills a different rate.
So let me just say that never was what the judge said. The judge said that we didn't do our process right.
Oh.
Even though there's nine other cities that have differential rates. In other cities, the differential rates are sometimes double what other people pay. Our delta is going to be right around $8, a little under $9 per month. And it'll probably close over the years as we add certain things in the city that we can do in the city that we can't do in the piece outside. Also, we have some infrastructure needs in the entire system, and that's all these things can go to. We also are not allowed to redistribute these funds for low income or for certain programs. It has to actually go into the system. So we went through this process for differential rates, examining the system as a whole and figuring out what our differential rates were supposed to apply. As the case with all the other areas with differential rates, if there's a wheeling agreement between two cities, you can't charge the higher rate. So yes, technically the folks in like Moran and Oro Valley who are our customers, they technically would be eligible for the differential rate, except that that city does have a wheeling. If that city didn't have a wheeling agreement, but the city does have a wheeling agreement, so that's what supersedes those pieces.
It's interesting to point out, in 1977, four Tucson City Council members were actually recalled over differential water rates.
So at that time, there were people in the city limits that were all the rates applied to, and it was a power. It was applied based on the power and wheeling the water at a higher elevation. And the algorithm they put in set the price up so that their fees and their water rate would increase by, at the time, 100 and 200 and 300%.
Wow.
And so like $8.73 sounds a little less now. $25 back then for water was a lot.
Yeah. I mean,
it was like tripling your water bill.
Yeah, and that was over these, what they call lift rates, these differential, depending on your elevation, there were different zones. And I believe it's the only time that a recall has been successful.
You couldn't, we don't want to do that to people.
No.
I mean, the idea here is this is a modest piece. I've explained this before. A lot of this is because we backstop all the liability on the lines outside the city limits. That's the biggest piece to this, and that's what the study is used for. And so when, even if the line busts outside of the city limits, the city of Tucson and the city of Tucson taxpayers are the ones that are liable for it. And that's kind of what the study kind of points in. So there's a whole bunch of different nuances to this, but as I said, we were actually given the authorization to raise the rates as much as 23%. I'm going to be on record as now as opposing that, because we don't want to just build some cliff and all of a sudden a bill show up, you know, with this big thing. As a matter of fact,
so the most it could be would be,
well, it depends on how much water you use, obviously.
Percentage, though, wise.
80 to 90% of our users in those areas, 80 to 90% of those users in those areas, the cost will be right around $8 or $9. That's the bottom line. And another piece I should mention, and I think this is kind of very pertinent to this point, is one of the things I think I'd like to do, or I'd like to see doing, is we, for the first 3 months, send a notice of what the differential rate would be, but you don't have to pay that much, just so you know it's coming. And you have about 3 months of a quote unquote grace period to do your annual budget. So I think that's important stuff. And I will also say, and I'm not trying to be mean on this one, I'm trying to just make a thing. This doesn't have to do with incorporation anymore. It's not supposed to. I'm on the record as talking about incorporation all the time, but that's a separate issue than the water rates.
All right. We're going to take a break right here. Councilman Paul Cunningham with us. And Councilman, this month we're welcoming a new sponsor, a new partner to our program, and you know these people very well, Pima Council on Aging. Have joined the Buckmaster team here. Support comes from Pima Council on Aging, PCOA's in-person and virtual healthy living programs focus on preventing falls, maintaining balance, improving flexibility and well-being while increasing socialization. PCOA's healthy living classes empower older adults to age well. Call PCOA Healthy Living at 520-305-3410. Be right back.
This is your captain speaking. Thank you for flying with Tucson International Airport, where you can avoid the hassles, long lines, and the expensive parking of the Phoenix Airport. Skip the traffic, breeze through security, and park with ease, all while supporting your community. Every flight from TUS brings more destinations and better connections right here to Tucson. So next time you're planning a getaway, remember, fly easy, fly local, fly TUS. This is your captain signing off. We're cleared for takeoff.
Vero Amore, where every certified authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza, pasta, panini, and salad is homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore is located in the lovely Plaza Palomino at Swan and Fort Lowell. Also, check out the full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore on the web at veroamorepizza.com.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
Hi, this is Irene Coppola, President and CEO of the Better Business Bureau serving Southern Arizona. The BBB sets the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the resource to turn to for the objective, unbiased information on businesses offering national and local consumer services online and in person. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau at bbb.org.
For more than a half century, Tucson Gardeners Trust Green Things, a family-owned and operated retail and wholesale plant nursery, offering an amazing variety of plants, trees, cacti, pottery, and so much more, all at great prices. The 13.5-acre site by the Rialto River is also home to the Zocalo Village, specializing in fine Mexican and Latin American imported furniture and art. Green Things open daily at 3384 East River Road and at greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com. The Regional Transportation Authority's 20-year plan is funded by a half-cent sales tax through June 2026. The funding has led to a $1.6 billion investment in regional transportation improvements over the past two decades to improve your quality of life. The RTA is working on a final draft of a new regional transportation plan for future voter consideration. The $2.46 billion draft plan includes roadway, transit, safety, bicycle, pedestrian, environmental, and other needed improvements. Learn more at rtanext.com.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show and the Green Thing is Zocalo Village Studios. This is our midweek edition of the program. Paul Cunningham, Tucson City Councilman, is with me. The city of Tucson is the last major city in the United States that still has free transit. That might be going away, Paul Cunningham.
Well, there's a lot to discuss. I mean, I think the biggest piece is whether or not we're going to bring back the full bus fares. I don't think we're going to go that far, but it definitely helps us do some leverage with some partnerships we have, as well as take a look at kind of where that investment and the subsidy that you know, the general fund's very tight right now. And so we've got some advocacy groups that are actually asking for bus fares, which is interesting as well. So it's a big discussion. Kansas City was one of the last cities to kind of hold out on having free buses. They've implemented that process as well. So we've implemented that process to study whether or not to bring bus fares back, and a lot of how our bus is structured depends on what our partnership looks like with the RTA, what kind of monies are available through FTA, and then our fares. So that's a big piece of how the bus functions well, and whether or not we can manage it.
Advocacy groups want this because they envision and they believe that the buses are highways to crime.
Yeah,
free buses.
There's definitely that sentiment that's been expressed around the community, and there's also some folks that are convinced that it won't change anything, and there were problems on the bus before. I think it's hard to say. I don't know if there's a right answer or not. More, we don't want to cut service. And the big piece to me is by having no bus fares, we can't charge enhanced bus fares, which causes problems specifically in Sunvan. And we need to have some call for service modeling in Sunvan, but if there's no fare we can charge, we can't even get there. Mm-hmm. And so those are some of the pieces to it.
So RTA Next, the program, the clock is running. Are we going to have a city of Tucson that's really on board with the program, another 20-year program?
So right now I can say that I don't think so. That right now what's out there, we don't have that. We don't have support that way. But I think there's a pathway to it, and that's what's really important, is that the more money we can set aside specifically for pavement modernization, in the city for existing roadways, whether they were built by RTA or not, is a big piece to whether or not it's a good deal for Tucson. There's a $70 million piece to BRT, along with a renewal of the $16.4 million, which will end up being about $19 million, the new version that goes into the bus, but it comes with all these different strings attached. We don't need it to have strings attached. It just needs to be, that full 23 needs to go into the transit system, and we should be able to have some latitude on how we put it into the bus. Mm-hmm. Those are some things that we'll probably ask for in this version of how the RTA unfolds. You can't fault the efforts made by the board and made by the chair on the work that they've been trying to, they've really tried to bring people to the table, find compromise, find common ground, and build some consensus to getting a package that's worthy. The albatross around their neck, unfortunately, is that there's been multiple projects cut completely off the board in the first iteration, and there's other projects whose scope is now being changed in the first iteration, when 5-10 years ago we were told you couldn't change the scopes ever. Mm-hmm. So as you can tell, as you can imagine, the different councils, not just Tucson's, but Marana's, the Oro Valley, there's some frustration that's there. I think this goes back to that incorporation discussion as well, where even the other towns and cities are saying, look, we have to do this tax, and at the same time, we have to manage our roads, and we're already charging sales tax to manage the roads we have in our towns and cities. Mm-hmm. Why can't the rest of the county do that for themselves? Mm-hmm. And I think that it's a very valid argument, but at some point we have to have a piece where we have that entity that makes sure the towns are connected. Mm-hmm. like a PAG. But this could be an opportunity to PAG to step in and say, hey, look, if some of these smaller areas want to incorporate, PAG can act as the contract PAG, city.
PEMA
Area of Governments.
Okay, PEMA Area of Governments. Okay.
And they can, if they act as basically the contract city facilitator, and they could put in a new role that way, that could actually be something that is definitely worth talking about, because it gives us the opportunity to increase some, you know, $60 to $80 million of state shared revenue that we're just kind of leaving on the table, some highway user money that we're leaving on the table because our state highways, we've got towns subsidizing. And then finally, it would be 2 pennies countywide, but not in the existing cities. And that's another $240 million. And all of a sudden now you're talking about an extra almost $500 million in general fund to those respective areas. Mm-hmm. And that's for services, and that's for coverage for fire and public safety coverage. That's for natural amenities. Mm-hmm. That's for water protection. That's for stormwater protection. But more importantly, that's for jail, courts, and public health, mm-hmm. which is where we are really suffering as a region. Mm-hmm.
So do you think it was a big mistake in the original plan to have these programs will get done, kind of those guarantees, that there wasn't flexibility to say, well, they might not?
Yeah, I think it's an image problem, and mm-hmm. it's just manifested that way, not because people aren't doing their best, mm-hmm. but because we ran out of money.
Yeah.
Things you can't predict recessions. You can't predict periods of high inflation, which this iteration of RTA met twice in two different periods.
The pandemic right at the beginning with the recession.
And right at the end with the pandemic.
Yeah.
So you just don't know how those things with RTA on a 25-year thing, how that can be set up. I think, again, when you get to it and you start talking about incorporation, the biggest thing is that there's some startup costs that go to towns that are really, really challenging. And if PAG could, excuse me, and by the way, to correct myself, it's PEMA Association of Governments, PEMA area, PEMA Association of Governments. Mm-hmm. A long time ago, as a segue, my dad was actually director of PAG many, many years ago.
Wow.
So he was one of the first directors of PAG. It can be the area where we take unincorporated areas and facilitate that contract city piece. And I think that could be a win. I think that could be a win for the whole region, but it would just depend on a number of different factors. Right now, there is an opportunity. There is definitely a pathway to have a symbiotic relationship with the RTA and the city of Tucson. And we've got to have faith in people, but it just doesn't exist right now in the current proposals being made.
So you would say right now is not, it's not looking good for RTA Next.
It doesn't. I mean, it.
I mean, there's still some time to work these things out.
Everybody's trying, and everybody's trying to come up with something. I think that the mayor of Tucson is now the chairman. I think there's absolutely some opportunity there. Mm-hmm. I think that, again, having some flexibility to, especially committing to BRT, if we can't get
BRT.
Bus Rapid Transit, committing that $70 million to BRT, if we can't get matching funds, I think could be bad mojo. So I think there's a number of things we could do. That could happen, but we've got to have that flexibility with transit, or we're really going to have a tough time.
All right, Paul Cunningham, the city's really dealing with some financial issues, right, coming up with the budget.
Yeah, we've got to talk about how we're going to balance into 26. I think we're pretty good now, but not so much. There's some service delivery pieces, especially in the public safety and housing realm, we've really got to get to, so that we don't not only keep our existing service, but actually enhance our existing service. And it's going to be a tough nut to crack.
All right, Paul Cunningham, good to see you. Thanks. Hope you have a great afternoon.
Thank you. Have a great day.
All right, take a break right here. Back after the mid-show break.
The nonprofit Tucson Wildlife Center has been helping injured, sick, and orphan wildlife in southern Arizona since 1999. They're dedicated to the rescue, medical care, and rehabilitation of sick, injured, and orphan wildlife, with the goal of releasing them back to their natural habitat. Around 5,000 animals a year come to them, as they are the only wildlife rescue in southern Arizona. All made possible through donations. They receive no government funding. Please donate at TucsonWildlife.com.
Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100.
Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastropub, serving an ever-changing menu of craft beer and fine fare. Savor the majestic mountain views from the perfect for any season spacious patio at West Lambert Lane and North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies. On the web at noblehops.com.
Are you ready to immerse yourself in a diverse culture while wandering through bustling markets, sampling exotic cuisines, or forging connections with people from all walks of life? Well, Bon Voyage Travel is here to plan your perfect journey. Whether you're setting off on a solo expedition, embarking on a group adventure, or simply dreaming of far-off destinations, we can help create your custom experience. The road ahead is filled with endless possibilities. Visit bvtravel.com to find your specialized Bon Voyage Travel advisor today.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The News and Sun's media reach 75% of the region through newspapers, websites, social media, video, newsletters, and more. They also produce more than a dozen print and digital magazines annually for an audience of 70,000. Find them at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, covering your hometown.
This is Bill Buckmaster urging my listeners to join me in becoming a member of the Reed Park Zoo, one of America's top zoos and home to more than 300 animals from all over the world. When you become a zoo member, you receive free daytime admission, discounts on special events and education programs, and so much more. Find out more about zoo membership and everything you need to know about your zoo visit, reedparkzoo.org.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show, the fastest hour in radio. We try to try to cover as much material as possible in our daily program during the noon hour. This program, of course, relies on great sponsors, and we really have them. People like Green Things and their sister business there at Green Things, Zocalo Village, 3384 East River Road by the Rito River. Just west of the Brandy Fenton Park, they have everything you need for the garden, and they've got incredible accessories and some beautiful handcrafted furniture at Zocalo Village, where the teardown sale continues up to 50% off on selected items. GreenThingsAZ.com and ZocaloVillage.com, family owned and operated since 1970. When we do our telephone interviews, and we're going to do one here momentarily, our live line on the program is presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. I'm very blessed to have about 24 regular contributors to the program. These are people at the top of their game, the top of their particular field. Will Humble is one of them. Will is our contributor on public health. He's the executive director for the Arizona Public Health Association. He served 6 years as the director for the Arizona Department of Health Services. He joins us now for his monthly visit. Will, how are you?
Good afternoon, Bill. Doing just fine. Hope you and your listeners are doing well.
Well, we are, but there are many who are very concerned about governing by chaos. I know some feel it's a good thing, but it seems when it comes to especially your area of expertise, public health and health care, the chaos translates into people getting hurt, if I might be so bold, Will Humble.
Yeah, if some of it's immediate and some of it's delayed, you know, we're going to have to do some triage to figure out what to talk about today. But
I know.
You know, like stopping research, that's a delayed sort of harm, but there's some more immediate things on the horizon. Anyway,
why don't you and we do have a lot of material to unpack today. Why don't you give us what you believe are some of the headlines, the top of the list items that folks need to know about when it comes to healthcare and federal connections to it, Will Humble.
Let's start with Medicaid work requirements. So I'm not necessarily saying that this is going to be super harmful, but a lot will depend on how well our state Medicaid agency implements this. So back in 2015, the state legislature passed a law that required our state Medicaid agency that provides health care for low-income persons and some people with disabilities. They said, hey, in order for people to qualify for access, and in addition to the, you know, financial, making sure that you're low income enough, you need to establish that you're trying to work or in school. And so the legislature charged the state Medicaid agency with implementing a work requirement program. Well, that came in fits and starts. They started to do that during the first Trump administration, and then the pandemic came along, and so that was suspended. The access kept trying. According to state law, they have to try every year and ask permission of the federal government to do this. They asked again this week. And so their proposal to the federal government, Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services, is to implement a work requirement program to qualify for Medicaid in Arizona for what are called able-bodied adults. So these are people between the ages of 19 and 55 who, you know, otherwise financially qualify for Medicaid, but beginning in October, most likely will need to show that they're either in a work program if they're not employed, or that they are working, but still financially qualify, or they're in school to try to, you know, change their skill sets. And so that most likely will come into play later this year in October. It's going to apply to about 200,000 folks here in Arizona, and there's about 2 million people enrolled in Medicaid. So it's only about 10% of that group. And the real key here is that when Access puts together the mechanism for people to report that either job or that they're in school, et cetera, that they, so that people understand how to do it and the computer system works. Other states that have implemented work requirements have really had trouble making it easy and convenient to get accurate data from their members about their enrollment in work or school.
It is up to the federal government, Will Humble, to determine the federal poverty limit. Here's a problem, though. The director, Mr. Kennedy, has fired the people who make the calculations. Am I portraying that accurately?
Yeah, that was about 3 days ago. It was Friday last week, or it could have been Monday this week. There was about 30 people whose job it is in the federal government to establish what's called the federal poverty level. That's the level that determines your eligibility for, say, for example, food stamps. We talked about Medicaid eligibility a second ago. The Women, Infant, and Children, or WIC programs. All of those are benchmarked against what's called the federal poverty level. And so there's a group of about 25 to 30 statisticians whose job it is to look at census data, income data, inflation information, and to come up with an algorithm to establish each next year's federal poverty level. And so all those safety net programs that I mentioned are tied to that FPL. You may hear people describing it as FPL. That stands for federal poverty level. So they've all been fired. Every year they establish a new federal poverty level, which makes sense, right? Because of inflation and costs of housing. And by the way, it's not just as simple as, you know, the consumer price index, because they take into account especially where low-income people need to spend their money, for example, housing and so forth. So they weight it, that FPL, towards, things like housing, et cetera, that are a dominant expense for low-income people. So I don't know how they're going to calculate the FPL next year. They didn't say. They just fired everyone. So I wrote a blog about it. Like, okay, like, you saved the salaries of like 30 people, but who's going to do the work to establish what that legitimate number is? I don't know.
Well, Health Secretary Kennedy is also cutting a lot of federal public health grants to Arizona, nearly $200 million.
Yeah, $230 million of grants, and they're called cooperative agreements in Arizona, and most of that money flows down to the county health departments. So in your case, Pima County, and some of your other listeners in other parts of the state would have their county health departments receive money. And that was, as you said, canceled. There is a multi-state lawsuit that's challenging that elimination of funds that were scheduled to go out over the next 4 years. There's a legal stay on it right now. So our county health departments and state health department are just waiting to find out, like, are these cuts going to actually happen? What's the judge going to do? And then is the administration going to end up complying with what the judge says in the end? So I think they're in a holding pattern at this point. Maybe you'll get on Dr. Cullen on the show, and she could talk about what they're doing within Pima County with respect to that. But it's, for each of these counties, it's, you know, well, Pima, I think it's about $20 million. Maricopa County is, I think, 18 to 25 million, and that's just for this first year. So it's a big change, and it happened without warning.
And Dr. Cullen was on our show a couple of weeks ago, Will, and she was trying to do some workarounds, but there's so many questions remaining about, what is going to be available. And you have to wonder, does the Trump administration have enough attorneys to represent this the government in all of the lawsuits that are out there around his particular actions. But anyway, getting back to federal health grants, that really does impact our First Nation community, the Navajo and Hopi Nation here.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It affects the state, federal health, the state and county health departments, but also the tribes as well. So, this is a big deal. And by the way, what this was designed to do, these funds were designed to close the gaps that we identified during the COVID-19 pandemic and fix the shortcomings in the public health system and the response system. So while these were characterized as COVID money by the federal government, it's not really federal. It's not really COVID related per se. It's to fix the components of the public health system that we identified as being broken during the pandemic.
All right, we'll take a break right here. Segment four is coming up with Will Humble. A couple of things still to cover. Autism rate has gone up, according to the CDC, and Mr. Kennedy, the health secretary, still says that autism epidemic is running rampant, but the new numbers kind of conflict with that. Also, about the measles outbreak, we'll have an update from Will Humble right after this.
Located in the heart of Arizona wine country, about an hour south of Metro Tucson, Flying Leap Estate Vineyards Winery and Distillery Facilities are one of the most beautiful wine venues in the southwestern United States. Come relax and unwind at our spacious property and learn about Arizona grape viticulture and winemaking from our team of trained sommeliers and discover the intricacies of the art of distillation. Learn more at flyingleapvineyards.com.
Travel is in my DNA. When I'm ready to start another adventure, my trip begins and ends at our local airport, Tucson International Airport. TUS is nonstop for our community and Southern Arizona. TUS, where it's made easy to fly. Start planning now for your next air adventure by visiting flytucson.com.
Nestled in the foothills of the Santa Rita Mountains of southeastern Arizona is Equine Voices and Sanctuary, home to horses and burros that were rescued from neglect, abuse, abandonment, and slaughter. Please consider Equine Voices Rescue and Sanctuary with a financial gift of support and estate remembrance. Learn more about our vision and values at equinevoices.org.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and penal politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
The Regional Transportation Authority invests over $100 million annually in transportation improvements in the greater Tucson region based on public input. The RTA and its regional partners deliver roadway, transit, safety, pedestrian, bicycle, environmental, and other needed improvements to meet the demands of transportation network users over a 20-year period. Learn more about the economic and quality of life benefits of the RTA's 2006 voter-approved plan and flexible funding at rtamobility.com.
Family-owned and run since 1985, Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is the gold standard for quality and professionalism for picture framing, custom frame mirrors, art for your walls, and hanging and lighting solutions. Come in for your design session or set it up electronically. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and now doing e-commerce at moesgallery.com.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. It is Holy Week for the Christian community and, of course, Passover for our Jewish friends. A lot of people will be celebrating this weekend, taking a look at, if you're thinking about a kind of a getaway, Silver City looks like Easter Sunday. How's that? Upper 60s. Delightful weather. Do some hiking, outdoor activities. About a three-hour drive east of Tucson. Not bad at all. And just a ton of stuff to do, mainly outdoors, but there's some great indoor things as well, like the collection of Mimbres pottery at Western New Mexico University there in Silver City. So a lot to do. Start your planning now by visiting southwestnewmexico.org. There's a lot on our agenda for our monthly visit with Will Humble, the former director of the Arizona Health Department and currently the executive director of the Arizona Public Health Association. Autism has been a big deal, a big focus for Health Secretary Kennedy. Will, 1 in 38 8-year-olds had autism in the United States. That's according to a report that was released just yesterday, actually. It's a small increase from the previous year, but nevertheless, Secretary Kennedy calls autism, he calls it an epidemic that's running rampant.
Well, there's no doubt that the number of kids who've been diagnosed with something on the, you know, what we call the spectrum, the autism spectrum, there's no doubt that that has increased. But there's one thing for your listeners and everybody to keep in mind that, like, when it comes to a diagnosis of autism, it's really a psychological test. And it's fairly subjective. In other words, when you're diagnosed with measles, let's say, okay, so there's a laboratory test for that. And you could say, okay, this is a case of measles. The laboratory has confirmed it. It's an objective assessment, you know, that this is a case. When it comes to autism, it has more to do with behaviors that psychologists and psychiatrists observe and that parents report for kids or adults. And so I just want everyone to kind of realize that when you hear about the increase in autism, that what you're hearing about is the increase in the diagnosis of something on the spectrum. But that can change over time. And so, for example, if the clinical guidelines for calling something autism shift, then you're going to see a shift in the number of people that are diagnosed as having autism. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. So I think part of what we've seen over the last 20 years is that the clinical assessment and the clinical guidelines have shifted, and the ways that the psychologists and psychiatrists evaluate kids and adults has changed over time. And so you have to keep in mind that while something may appear to be on a big increase, part of that is due to, the assessments that are given and the motivation for parents that, you know, to get additional services within their schools, school districts, and so forth, so that they can optimize, you know, the functionality of their kids. So yes, it has increased, but part of that is due to shifts in the assessment process. But I have to say, I do applaud Mr. Kennedy for putting some additional resources within the Department of Health and Human Services to try to figure out and put some additional research into, you know, fleshing out, like, you know, is there an environmental trigger? Is there an environmental exposure that is causing some of this? And I just hope that the assessment that is done by the department through the secretary is really looking at it comprehensively, not just looking for environmental exposures, but also looking at this issue of the methods used for diagnosing people with autism.
Yeah, it's really changed the method. Tom was just pulling up some information on my screen. In 1980, it was 1 in 2,000 cases. I think that was what Tom had up on the screen, diagnosed with autism. But the way the whole process has changed too. So there are a lot of factors here. When it comes to this particular topic, right, Will?
Yeah, and that's why I just wanted to point out that this isn't a laboratory test that's plus or minus, black or white.
No.
This is something that's some shade of gray that somebody has decided, and they need benchmarks, and those benchmarks are subjective depending on, you know, who's doing the assessment and the behavior of the child during the assessment. You know what kids are like, they can be behaving one way and then it can change. So anyway, it's definitely a public health issue. I think there is definitely a real increase in it, but just keep in mind that it's not a black and white test like, you know, getting a cancer biopsy or something.
The Associated Press reports pediatricians across the country were really, they were waiting for a letter, which is a routine letter, but it's very important about, we're talking about measles, this letter that outlines how the doctors could best stop the spread of the disease. Well, that letter, now that the number of cases has grown to more than 700, finally came out last week, and some are being very critical of Secretary Kennedy and his team in really being behind the curve, Will Humble, in this measles outbreak.
Well, I mean, we've known since 1962 what's the best way to prevent measles. I mean, it's the vaccine, period. And so, you know, when you have a measles outbreak, the number one thing you need to do is to find that initial case as soon as you possibly can so that it you can prevent the spread and, you know, to the community. Identify those kids that were exposed to the virus and get them vaccinated as soon as you can. And, you know, do those basic elements of the outbreak. And then the bigger thing is to just remind parents of, you know, how important it is to get their kids vaccinated, whether or not they were exposed. So the number, there's no disputing it. I mean, the number one way to prevent measles is to have herd immunity within a population and to have as many people vaccinated as possible. And it needs to be above 90% for measles to not spread within the community because it's the most contagious disease that we have.
Yeah.
It's super contagious.
One item just a minute or so left, but I think it's important, and you pointed out in your blog something about AZ Care Check 2.0. Could you articulate that real quickly?
Yeah, back in about 20 years ago when I was working at the State Health Department, we put together a computer program so that people could check the status of nursing homes, assisted living centers, behavioral health facilities, so that they could get the licensing and inspection data from those facilities, because obviously, you know, if your mom might be going to assisted living or skilled nursing, you want to know what did the inspectors find out there. And over time, that computer system had gotten more and more clunky. The State Health Department just finished refurbishing that site. It's called azcarecheck.com. You can also reach it on azdhs.gov and search for AZ Care Check. And you can look at the facilities down in Southeast Arizona. If you have questions about anything from, you know, a community health center to an outpatient treatment clinic to, you know, nursing homes and assisted living centers, I encourage people to do that so that they're really informed before they make a choice.
All right. Good advice, as usual, from Will Humble. Will, and again, where can people find out about the blog?
Yeah, you can visit my blog at azpha.org or just go into Google and say Arizona Public Health Association and post something just about every day.
All righty. Will, we'll talk to you in the merry month of May. Hope you have a great afternoon. Thanks, Will.
All right. All right. Take care, Bill.
Bye. All right. That's going to wrap it up for our midweek edition of the Buckmaster Show. We will do it all again in about 23 hours. And we'll be ready to go. When the red light goes on, it's tally light fever, as they say. All right. Thanks to Tom on the other side of the glass. Bill here wishing everybody well.